When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. My name is Lucas Vlaho. No, it's not. I'm Steve Saipa, guys.
Wow, he's back.
I'll be filling in for Lucas. Yeah, I'll be filling in for Lucas. That's weird to say, but just when I thought I was out, they pull me back in. I am joined by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. It's good speaking with you guys. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, I'm just getting over being sick, so been better, but you know, rallying.
All right, so your health has some rising helium here. We got to put things in prospect terms.
My life.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Well, spring training is starting, so you gotta get better there, Ken. And you're usually our guy down in Port St. Lucie. Come on, man.
I'll start pounding the vitamin C shortly.
Start pounding the vitamin C and start walking. I think if you leave now, you probably make it by the time.
Yeah, he should get there in time.
Exactly. Walk the entire Appalachian Trail. Hell yeah.
Then I'd still have to find a way to get to Florida.
Oh, that's true. It does end technically in, I think, Georgia. Yeah. All right. So, promote extend trade and Valentine's Day just passed. And, of course, the most notable Valentine in the Mets organization is the one and only Bobby Valentine. So love him or hate him, and unless you're like one of the Wilpons or Steve Phillips, I don't know how you could hate Bobby Valentine. But either way, he's obviously left a very big footprint on, you know, the Mets as an organization as a whole. So I went through his biography, and I picked three interesting Mets-related tidbits about Bobby V to promote, extend, or trade. So here we go. Number one, when he was attending USC, University of Southern California, his roommate was none other than Bill Buckner. Second is that, believe it or not, this was a good funny one, he was a champion ballroom dancer. And he won a regional dance competition, and he took part in the opening ceremonies of the 1964 World's Fair, which was in Flushing, Queens.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And last one is that in 2016, on the recommendation of current Mets Board of Directors member Chris Christie, he was seriously being considered to be appointed the U.S. Ambassador to Japan.
That one I think I knew already, because he had, like, playing ties in Japan, right? Or managing?
Yeah, managing. He was the manager of the Chiba Lab Marines. Very, very loved.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that when I started to get into MPB during the lockdown, that I was reading up on the history of the league. That one was always interesting to me. Because it's like, It's kind of like how one of the Steelers owners was like an ambassador to Ireland because he's Irish under the Obama administration.
Really?
And it's like, yeah. And it's like, huh, okay, sure. Like that's interesting.
That's all you need that's all that needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, because all, it, like, I guess it's just like a relationship thing. I don't know how that really works, the ambassador stuff, because it feels like it's very unserious sometimes.
Yeah. Bobby V being the ambassador, though, that could cause some diplomatic complications, I'm thinking.
He's going to show up to the ambassador's meeting in a fake mustache. But yeah, I think that's the story for me. That or Bill Buckner because of the Mets combination, because of all the people.
Yeah, no, that's. I mean, obviously, Bobby Valentine was not involved with the Mets in 1986 and everything like that, but still, it's like, wow, like you said, of all the people.
Two Mets legends, Bobby Valentine and Bill Buckner.
Mm-hmm. But then you have to consider the ballroom championship dancing.
I want to see video. I want tape. I want Bobby Valentine ballroom dancing tape. I need it.
We'll have to look into that. We'll have to get our people on that. And then when I was reading that, the first thing I thought of was South Park and Butters being a championship ballroom dancer.
Of course. That's so funny.
Yep, good times. All right, well, we're going to move on here. And when we last left off, you guys were getting pretty close to finishing up the 2024 Mason Avenue Top Prospect List. And you've finished going over prospects 11 to 7. So this week, we're just going to finish things. We're going to move on along and just finish things up 6 to 1. So first up, coming in at 6 is, I guess, the most divisive Mets prospect out there still, even taking into account Colin Houck. And that is Mr. Ronnie Mauricio. And Ronnie spent the entire season in AAA, and he hit 292, 346, 506 in 116 games. He had 23 home runs, 24 stolen bases in 31 attempts, and he drew 35 walks and 97 strikeouts. The numbers definitely pop out at you, especially considering if you look at Ronnie's 2022 season, his 2021 season, his 2019 season. Nothing was particularly good. So the numbers, you know, hitting 292 and slugging 506, those definitely pop out at you. But the high level of offense in the International League this year was so wacky that, you know, basically an 850 OPS results in a 108 weighted runs created plus.
Which is wild. Like, yeah, it's hard to fathom that that's like league, that's like steroid era baseball shit. Like a guy hitting like 312 and his WRC plus is like 98 because Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds were hitting like 70 home runs. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's just hard to fathom that that's how mediocre it kind of was for the league, but it's just the numbers don't lie.
Yeah. I mean, the league, I think let me look this up real quick. Well, it doesn't really matter. I don't want to waste too much time. But the league average was, like, insane. So, but, you know, Ronnie, he did well. And in September, the Mets called him up. And in his very first at-bat, he hit a double that was clocked with an exit velocity of 117.3 miles per hour. And that was the hardest ball that any Mets player hit all season. But then typical Ronnie Mauricio fashion, his bat cooled off after a couple of weeks, and he ended up hitting 248, 296, 347 in 22 games in his cup of coffee, which was an 88 that weighted. And then following the conclusion of the season, when he was playing in the Dominican Winter League, he tore his ACL. And as of right now, the prognosis is that he's going to be out for basically the entire 2024 season.
Yeah, not we probably won't see him. I would be shocked if we do.
No. It's unfortunate because, and I feel like we've been saying this for a very long time, but this is going to be the most important season for, and then insert prospect. And, you know, next year was going to be a very important year for Mauricio. And now it's not happening at all.
Yeah, it really sucks for him. And honestly, Like, I know he wasn't that great last year. Like, he had an 80 WRC plus in the majors and 108 plate appearances. I'm looking at it right now. But that could be kind of useful in a bench role if you play second, short, third. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the best player in the world, but also it's a bench player that you could kind of throw out there when a guy pulls his hamstring for 15 days and is on the IL and it's fine. But I don't know. I think the issues that he has are just going to stop him from hitting a ceiling that his the way he like does damage to the ball is really impressive, but he just doesn't hit the ball enough. Like 28% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate is going to be tough. He did all that with like he ran a little bit, which is nice. I don't know. It's just it's hard to see a high level starter ceiling, but like you could kind of have him on the bench for a few years and let him rock there. And maybe he has more upside if you platoon him really well, because he's a better right-handed hitter than left-handed. He's a better left-handed hitter. I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, what his better handedness is, but he has a better handedness. And so, yeah, I don't know. He's just kind of there. And it would have been nice to see him make his debut this year and actually make the team and be a part of the bench.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, guys, you know, come out of nowhere in spring training to put up great numbers and they gain momentum and the team rolls with those guys first and whatever. But, you know, Ronnie very conceivably could have made the team out of spring training, and he very conceivably could have even gotten a lot of at-bats at the beginning of the season.
Now, yeah, I mean, you don't know what... You know what would have happened with the third base job. Like, he would have been in competition for that, I'm sure. With as of right now, they're leaving it up to the kids. He could have taken Joey Wendell's job, and because that's an easy contract to get out of, you know. So I don't know. It would have been nice to see him get a shot at it again, but also it sucks for him that he had to play in Winter Ball in the first place, which is another problem with the minor leagues and how little these guys are paid. That he felt like he had to do it for financial reasons. I'm pretty sure was the reason, but
yeah, it was reported that basically he was playing for the Tigres de Licey because most, if not all, of the original signing bonus that he got when he signed with the Mets was siphoned away by, you know, unscrupulous agents and family members and whatnot, and the trickle down didn't trickle down. So,
yeah, that sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I mean, he's still a top 10 prospect in the system. And I still think there's like a utility player upside here, just for the power aspect and the defensive flex aspect, even though he's not the greatest defender at any of those positions. But I think it's hard to see a starter, even though he's only 22. It's just keeps makes the same problems. It's the same bat, the same problems trying to make good swing decisions. And I feel like we've been talking about that since he was like a 17-year-old or 18-year-old, you know?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately we have. If you go into the numbers, there are very stark and alarming differences between the damage that he does on fastballs as opposed to the damage that he does on breaking pitches and off-speed pitches. And unfortunately, you're not going to last if you suck against sliders and if you suck against changeups and if you suck against curveballs. And unfortunately, in a pretty large sample size, you know, 100 plus games in AAA, which is not the major leagues, obviously, but, you know, there are plenty of guys that are quad A players that have spent time in the major leagues in AAA. And then he did get a month's worth of at-bats with the Mets. So there's a decent enough sample size there that the results were just not good.
Yeah, and he was just okay with those at-bats, so.
Yeah, it just, like you said, it's not a profile, it's not the profile of a starting player, but there is value in there. You know, anyone that could freaking rocket 117 mile per hour doubles, I think there's some utility in there somewhere. You can figure it out.
Yeah, and I think that's what – if he does have a longer major league career, I think that's where it would end up for him, is being that type of guy who is a bench player and a rotational infielder type, and other guys are just starters, and then he kind of bounces around the league and stuff like that. I could see that type of career for him, which is a little disappointing, but also it happens. And there's worse careers that you can have, and there's worse outcomes for prospects that we have seen.
Absolutely. I mean, even though he was a high-profile international signing, the fact that he's gotten to where he is right now, that he's made his major league debut, and that, you know, we don't have to exactly squint to see some sort of possible role, you know, there is a pretty obvious path for him if things break right. You know, that's a win.
The thing that really sucks, though, is I think his athleticism would have really helped that, and I don't know what it's going to look like post-ACL tear. Obviously, this isn't like 1920, where an ACL tear probably ends your career, but like it sucks. You know what I mean? Like,
throw some dirt on it.
Like you see it in sports all the time that an ACL is a tricky one, even if it's not even modern medicine. It's the same thing with Tommy John. Like, Tommy John's no, having it is easier than it was 20 years ago, but that doesn't make it a good, like a whatever thing, a thing that you just shrug your shoulders.
These are tricky.
Yeah. I was quickly Googling something, and I found, like, a medical excerpt from 2015. So, I mean, it's a little dated, but not, like, really bad or anything like that at this point. But there's a study where, like, they looked at 50 Major League Baseball players who had ACL injuries, and, like, 32%, you know, I mean, like, 32 of the 50 returned and were, you know, basically exactly the same, and, like, 6 returned and were not as good. And then like 10 returned and they were, you know, better, but that's not a very meaningful sample. I don't know what the criteria was for, and then, you know, just the progression of a major league player, as we know, is very, it's not linear, and a player doing better or worse could have nothing to do with the knee at all, because there's so many other things that go into it. So.
Oh, for sure. Like, I would assume that he's fine in the long run, but. I think it's something still to keep an eye on. It's not like a sprained ankle or even like a torn hamstring or something. Like, an ACL is a big surgery. It's a year, even in baseball. So it's still something to keep an eye on, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, hopefully he returns better than ever in 2025. All right, number 5 now is the highest ranked pitcher on our list. Right-handed pitcher Christian Scott. He started the 2023 season on the Cyclones injured list. His season debut was delayed for about a month. He returned to the mound in early May. He had a 2.28 ERA and 23.2 innings over 6 starts with the Cyclones. He was then promoted to the Rumble Ponies in mid-June, and he remained there for the rest of the season. And he made 12 starts for them, and he posted a 2.47 ERA in 62 even innings with 44 hits, 8 walks, and 77 strikeouts. So at both levels combined, he had a 2.42 ERA in 85.2 innings, and that trailed only Tyler Stewart among Mets starters for lowest ERA in 2024. Two things stand out regarding Scott's season last year. First, they made him a dedicated starter as opposed to being starting and relief, which I would assume helps in terms of preparation and stuff like that. But the bigger thing, I guess, the more important thing, is they adjusted his arsenal over last winter when he was in the AFL. They had him stop throwing a sinker, which wasn't a bad pitch necessarily, but, you know, it's a pitch that relies on weak contact, ground balls, stuff like that to generate outs, and you can't always rely on that. And they more or less replaced his sinker with a regular four-seam fastball, and that misses a ton of bats because it has mid to high 90s velocity, it has rising life, it's good. And his changeup also improved. It went from basically being, you know, left-hander only offering into one that he uses against left-handers and right-handers. That gave him a bona fide third pitch. He started using that more, along with his fastball and slider. Three good pitches. Starting, three good pitches, recipe for success.
Yep. It's like a really good fastball, too. It's like a like a 7-8 fastball.
He's probably gonna make
the majors this year, right? Unless something bad happens, I would assume we see him.
Yeah, well, I mean, optimally, I guess he doesn't make the majors. You know, optimally, all the Mets starters have Cy Young caliber seasons. But
he's such a good prospect, you can't keep him down.
That's true.
Because I think at some point with pitching, I think I'd rather be a little more aggressive with arms than non-aggressive with arms, because you never know when the UCL is going to pop. Like, I know that's very cynical, but like, pitchers get hurt, man. And if he's balling in June and the Mets are in it, there's no reason not to see if he could do it in the majors. Because then, like, not that this happens all the time, but look at guys like Matthew Allen. You know, he was a hell of a pitching prospect, and then we saw what happened with him. So yeah, it's a tough one. It's I think we're gonna see him in the majors though this year.
Smoky Joe Wood syndrome.
Yeah, but he's good. I mean, I think he laps Vassell. I think he has a chance to start long term. I think I just think he's a huge pitching development win for an organization that hasn't had them in a really long time, because for the most part they have not been doing shit like that. You know, they've been making pitchers worse or not getting them better at all for most of our lives. So to see a pitching development win like that for the Mets is really nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, they've had this is something that one of the few things that they've been like on the up and up the last couple of years between, you know, having Mike Vassell do the same thing, stop throwing your sinker and throw the four seam fastball instead, or vice versa. I forget, you know, Dominic Hamill is a guy that there's still a lot of work to be made there, but you know, we know the pure stuff is there and he hasn't gotten worse. So hopefully he'll get better. And then obviously Christian Scott has gone from, I don't want to call him a no-name guy because that's not true, but going from zero to hero, you know.
I mean, his development was under the Mets. Like, he wasn't that huge of a prospect before, and the Mets really did a good job. Like, Eric Jaegers has been great since they hired him, and he just got promoted, or he's like according to Mike Mayer, he's the vice president of pitching. So like, he's a huge deal with the org now. And that's a really good thing, because I think he's been doing nothing but positive things with pitching development since he came. So,
yeah, I mean,
hopefully this is how you get – this is how you don't pay all these starters like ridiculous amounts of money, and how you pay Juan Soto money next year. You know what I mean? If Christian Scott comes up and is good, that's one less starter you have to pay $20 million to next year. And then you could allocate that somewhere else to a superstar – outfielder or something, you know, like these pitching wins are important for that too. So that's why I also think we'll see him. There's just so many question marks with the 2025 rotation still. Most of these guys are not under contract. So,
yep. And honestly, the only thing that we could say that was lacking in terms of Scott's season was just the durability of the innings pitched. You know,
yep.
He missed the first month of the season recovering from an injury, and then the Mets were kind of treating him lightly because of that. But, you know, other than that, the fastball, great. The secondary is working off the fastball, great. The control has always been phenomenal. There was no issue there. You know, the results speak for themselves. Let's say that he threw, instead of 85.2 innings, let's say he threw a more durable, you know, starters workload. Let's say he threw 135 innings.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, does he leapfrog anybody else on our list in terms of just the Mets and, you know, other players on, let's say, national top 100 lists?
Maybe Acuna is the only one I could think of, but even then, I don't think so. I think he is where he's supposed to be at five. I think that's a good place for where he's at. Maybe he goes to – maybe you could, like, jumble the top five a little bit. But because I kind of think even one through five is kind of like its own top – the top tier-ish, because I think he's clearly the best pitching prospect, and I don't think it's, I don't want to say I don't think it's close, because I like the other pitching prospects, but I think he's better than the rest of them, and I think there's more of a ceiling there, I should say. So, maybe four, but I don't know. I think I'd probably still keep him at five.
Well, speaking of four, then let's move on to number four, Ryan Clifford, which is somewhat controversial based on the comment section. But Clifford was acquired by the Mets on August 1st when they traded Justin Verlander to the Astros and got back a package of him and Drew Gilbert. Clifford was assigned to the Brooklyn Cyclones. He finished out the rest of the season there, and he hit 188, 307, 376 in 32 games with four doubles, six home runs, one stolen base, and 18 walks to 51 strikeouts. Prior to his time at Brooklyn, he spent time with single-A Fayetteville and high A Asheville, and with all three at all three stops combined, he hit a cumulative 262, 374, 480 with 20 doubles, 24 home runs, five stolen bases in seven attempts, and 61 walks to 140 strikeouts. Let's just talk about the elephant in the room here. Clifford is a, I don't want to say he's a bat-only player, but the bat is where you're getting 99.9% of value.
Sure. I don't think he's like Adam Dunn-level bat-only player. Like, he could probably play the outfield at a okay. Like, it's not putting Lucas Duda in right field. At least it isn't right now. But he's not going to be a Gold Glover out there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's fine. And also, like, his numbers in Brooklyn were terrible, but that park is, like, designed to be awful for him. It's just a awful combination of things for him with the being left-handed and the wind and where the batter's eye is with the amusement park behind it is really tough for left. Like, I don't know. It's just a really bad place for him. So he needs to get out of there. But, and he will this year, so it's fine. But, I mean, I saw him after the trade. And the sound the ball makes off his bat is it's literally different than everyone else who played in that game. Like, it's just – it's so loud. And he hits the ball so hard. And his bat speed is so much faster than everyone else's that I think he's going to be really good. Like, I he's one of my guys that I could, like, flag plant. I think he's going to be good.
Yeah, I mean, his – you know, you mentioned the sound of the ball off the bat. He's basically, there were five teenagers in all of minor league baseball to have 20 or more home runs last year, and Clifford was one of those five. And, you know, his 90th percentile exit velo was 107.1, which, you know, obviously anything above 100 is really good. So 107 is right in that, like, yes, wheelhouse. And
yeah,
you know,
It's more like, can he play a serviceable outfield? Does he have to be a DH? Because then it's a different conversation. Is he a first baseman? Because then you have Alonso, and I don't know what you do with that, but I don't know. He's just a hitter. Like, that dude could just hit the baseball.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of power. He walks, you know, he does strike out a little bit, but what slugger, you know, that's basically all sluggers in today's day and age. That's on, forget sluggers, that's just everybody in
that's
today's
every
day
player
and age. But, you know, he works the counts, he drives pitches that he can drive, he walks, you know, there's a lot to like with the bat, to the point that there's a good chance that he does provide the value from just that bat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Being a net neutral outfielder at best, or, you know, a net neutral first baseman, that is fine because there's a chance that his bat is that good.
Yeah, if he is a net neutral outfielder and is also hitting the ball really hard and hitting home runs and stuff like that, I'm totally fine with the lack of, like, I don't need every player doesn't have to be a Gold Glover to be a good player, you know? Like, obviously you would rather that, but It's just unrealistic to expect that from every single player, you know?
Yeah, that is a trap that I think. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just saying it's funny that the Mets are kind of building that this year with how their offseason went. They signed a lot of very good defensive players, but a lot of them also aren't the best hitters in the world. So it's kind of, if they're both, then they are an MVP candidate and a superstar. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
You can't be, what the hell is his name? Andres Torres. You can either be Andres Torres or Angel Pagan. Pick one, but you can't be both. But yeah, Clifford is a very fun player. The numbers obviously took a hit in Brooklyn, but there are only a select few players that thrive in Brooklyn, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with him being a very specifically bad match for the ballpark. Mm-hmm. And I would not be surprised if he's a lot better when he goes to AA. It's just such a bad place to hit, especially for a guy like that, who's a power first guy. Because, I mean, if you go to those games, it's even in the summer, it's like windy from the water. And I don't know how anyone hits over there, to be honest with you.
Also, he's a 19-year-old kid. I think he was had under his, like, he was like 90 games already when he got to Brooklyn. Like, he just might have been gassed.
Yeah, that's true too. And it's the move. Like, we talk about we talk about that stuff all the time, I feel, but it's moving to a new organization, moving to new teammates, moving to a new part of the country, and all that stuff on top of playing a lot of baseball and all that stuff, and pitchers that you've never seen because it's a different league. So,
mm-hmm. Suffice to say that, you know, there's still a lot of good in his future, let's hope.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his.
Elevate your summer with Osea's best-selling body care set. It's everything you need for radiant summer skin on the go. Featuring travel sizes of Osea's clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral skincare, like their best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Right now, you can get the bestseller's body care set, a $78 value, 33% off. And use code SUMMER to save an additional 10%. That's an additional 10% off at oceamalibu.com, code SUMMER.
All right, now number three is Luis Angel Acuña, and he was acquired by the Mets on July 30th when the Mets sent Max Scherzer and a cool $35 million to the Texas Rangers. He started his year with the AA Frisco Rough Riders. In 84 games with them, he hit .315, .377, .453 with 25 doubles, 2 triples, 7 homers, 42 steals and 47 attempts. And 37 walks and 76 strikeouts. When he got to the Mets, they sent him to AA Binghamton, and he appeared in 37 games for them, and he hit .243, .317, .304, with 3 doubles, 2 home runs, 15 stolen bases and 20 attempts, and 15 walks to 30 strikeouts. So, all in all, Acuña appeared in 121 games for both AA teams, and he hit a cumulative .294, .359, .410, with 28 doubles, 2 triples, 9 homers, 57 stolen bases in 67 attempts, and 52 walks to 106 strikeouts. Most of the good numbers obviously coming with his time with the Rough Riders. Acuña, I think, is a very different player from all of the players that we've discussed, not just today, mm-hmm. but on the entire list. Completely, you know. He's got some pop. He's not what I would call a slugger. He's got a solid bat, but, you know, it's far from, you know, otherworldly. We've already seen some cracks and we've seen some struggles. He's not like a defensive wizard, but he's good at the position, you know, shortstop, but he's not like a maven or nothing like that. But his speed it amplifies everything else and raises the floor so much. And we don't really have anyone else in the organization like that that is actually good, is actually a noteworthy prospect player. You know, there are plenty of guys that are fast and speedy, but not like Acuna with that collection of then the rest of those tools. You know, everything else is, I would say, you know, maybe average, but everything else.
I mean, that's why he's a top 100 prospect, despite not having like a crazy offensive carrying tool, you know, because he's clearly a top 100 prospect. And he's funny because I don't really know what the ceiling is, but I think he has a really high floor. I don't see him being like an MVP candidate or anything. Obviously, he could put more lifts into his swing and really hit more home runs. And then he's not his brother, and that's going to be a thing that's probably going to carry him, could like follow him for the rest of his career, because that's how that shit like that happens all the time. But like, I think he's going to be a solid player, but it might be a solid player who plays a different position every day and is coming off the bench and doing a lot of versatile stuff for you, but he's not like your best player. And that's not a bad thing, but I think he's just not as good as the top two guys. And that's why I think he's three, you know, like I think the other two guys,
have basic math. Stuff. Yes.
Yeah. Basic math. But like, I think the top two guys are like clearly in a different little bit of a category. If we're going to break it down 1, 2, and 3, you know, I think there's a clear third, and then you could, kind of switch between the two how you want to at the top. Yeah, I like Acuna. It's just I'm worried about the swing decisions a little bit. It's not Mauricio level bad, but I'm worried he's not going to walk a ton, which would negate the speed a little bit if he's not on base as much as he could be. So,
I mean, he's
like maybe
he's basically another guy where the ball is going on the ground way too much.
Yep, and with a guy that fast, that's not as bad as if it's someone like Brett Beatty, who, when he has that problem, he grounds out because he's just not that. He's not going to beat out those singles, but you don't want those singles anyway. You want those to be doubles in the gap, even if it's not a home run, you know?
Right. So,
and yeah, I mean, maybe he's one of those guys who plays second, short, center field for you. I wonder what the fit looks like with Lindor, because Lindor's never sitting. So it's kind of an interesting fit that his best position or his main position is occupied by the guy who plays 161 games a year. So that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, maybe he's just one of those guys who plays a bunch of positions for you and is versatile, which is also very, very valuable. It's just, I feel like people might get disappointed if that's what the outcome is. Because when you talk about top three prospect in the system, you think starter, like surefire every day. But
especially when his last name is Acuna and his brother is you know,
one of the five best players in the league.
Luis Angel is not going to hit 41 home runs. He's not going to. He could steal 73 bases.
Yeah, he could definitely steal the bases. I don't know if he's going to hit the home run.
No, and he's probably not going to hit. What did Acuna hit? Like 240, 250? I mean, excuse me, 340, 350, something like that. I don't think that Luis Angel is going to hit 350.
And how do you feel about him?
Acuna?
I'm curious to hear your opinion on him.
Generally speaking, I like this kind of player. The thing that I has impressed me about Acuna is just his level of polish and like this high baseball IQ.
That's true.
Generally speaking, I like those guys. So, like Jimenez comes to mind when I think that type of player, where the general like know-how and polish lets the whole skill set play up. I guess the long-winded way of saying that I like him because I like guys with baseball IQ.
Yeah,
I think it's likely he figures out how to make it work.
He feels just like a guy who's one of those, oh, he's a winning player, ass players. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Just a guy who quietly wins like three World Series. And
who is the guy?
Like, he
never a star, but
yeah, exactly. Like he's just good everywhere he goes, and he's like a jack of all trades type player, which is super valuable, especially when benches are kind of getting smaller with the DH and stuff. Like you kind of see how the Mets built their bench this year, and it's kind of like a, it's kind of an interest. Obviously, we don't know what it is yet, but it's kind of like a weird group of players. But Acuna would like take over backup outfielder, backup middle infielder, and play all the time, even if he's not starting every day, and maybe starting at different positions every day, and that shit's really valuable.
Yeah, you bring up outfield. The Rangers experimented with him a little bit in center field last season, but it was didn't last very long. But the tools are definitely there to play center field. You know, he's extremely fast. He covers a lot of ground. And in addition to just being fast, he has, like, the quick twitch fast, where, you know, it doesn't take him a while to finally get going. Like, he could just... He's got, like, the jets. He's got wheels. That could be, you know, I mean, obviously, center field's not easy, and he'll have to learn, you know, routes and reading the ball off the bat well and all that kind of stuff. But that would give him another viable, and the Mets, I don't know, another viable path for him to make it to the majors and to have a positive influence in the major leagues. And I think it's definitely something that should be looked into. Not that the Mets are hurting. Not that the Mets are hurting.
In the middle infield. Yeah. He's blocked by Lindor, and then like the number one prospect in the system plays second base. So like you can't in any other organization, you stick him at shortstop and you play him at shortstop when he debuts, but that's just not an option here. And moving him to second, I'm sure we see Jett before him, so I don't know if that, how much that's an option, because Jett has utility too. We'll talk about that, but I think second base is forever home probably. So he's kind of needs to figure it out and figure out a different position if the Mets are going to keep him, which is a very interesting proposition, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, for the first time in a long while, it feels like the Mets have a lot of players. A lot of prospects, not necessarily a lot of available playing time. And a lot of these players are all ready to come up sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
Well, one such guy is number two on the list, Drew Gilbert, who, as mentioned, was acquired by, was acquired from the Astros in the Verlander deal. After he arrived, he was assigned to Binghamton, and he played in 35 games there, and he hit 325, 423, 561, with seven doubles, two triples, six homers, two stolen bases, and 19 walks to 30 strikeouts. Prior to that, he was actually struggling, but I think we can write those struggles off to nagging elbow discomfort. And in the 60 games prior to his time in Binghamton, he hit 241, 342, 371 with the AA Corpus Christi hooks. We, as a group, all put Jett Williams as the number one. He was the unanimous number one prospect. We all put Drew Gilbert, the unanimous number two prospect. Are there any ways that you guys can come up with where Drew Gilbert flips Jett Williams and is the number one prospect in the Mets system?
Comes up to the majors first and is a good major leaguer, but then he's not a prospect anymore. Because they're just both there. Like, they're close, you know? I'm assuming we're going to see both of them. Maybe not Jett. He's young. But Gilbert's probably going to make his debut in, like, July, unless shit goes horribly wrong or horribly right and Marte is super good. And poor Drew Gilbert gets blocked. But I don't know. I think we're going to see Gilbert this year, and maybe he just is a good major leaguer before Jett Williams is, but then we're ranking Jett first anyway because Gilbert graduates.
All right, fair. Yeah, I mean, Gilbert is about as well-rounded a player as prospect as they've had in a very long time. You know, he's Conforto. He feels like Conforto, but with much better defense.
Probably less pop, than Conforto, I would say. Like, pure home run power. I don't think he's going to be that level of, like, peak healthy Conforto home run hitter, but he feels like a guy who's just going to be, like, a 10-year vet outfielder type. And he's just good the whole time. Like, he can play defense, he can play the corners, he can play center, he can run. He does have pop. He's not like a noodle bat. I don't think he's going to hit like 40 home runs or whatever, but or 30, whatever Conforto hit at his peak. I think he hit 30 once. But like, yeah, he's just a good player.
And he's a really honestly, good prospect. There's no weaknesses, really. I mean, like, we can look at, like you said, number one and the number two prospects in the system right now are in a tier of their own. And, you know, if we look, we were just talking about Acuna, and, you know, we said, you know, there's no pop. Acuna doesn't really have pop. And we were talking about Clifford, and we were concerned about, you know, the defensive position and the swing and the miss. You know, Gilbert does not really have any flaws. You know, the most you could say is, you know, maybe he swings and misses a little bit too much, or we would like to see a little bit more power out of him, given that he's going to be an outfielder. But that's he still does those things well enough, you know?
Yeah. And that's how good Jett Williams has been, is that we all voted him one, and it's pretty – I don't think most everyone has him one, too, I'm pretty sure.
So. Yeah, I think – I don't know. Let me see if it's still – if they still have it in this way, because I know that MLB.com had
Pipeline. Yeah, I forgot about them.
As they the number
Acuna one for sure.
Let's see. Yep, it's still there. They have Acuna as one, Drew Gilbert as two, Jett Williams as three. But you know, that is a place that has long had somewhat questionable ordinal rankings. So that is what it is. But point is that Gilbert and Jett Williams are on a tier of their own in the Mets minor league system this year. So on that, we'll talk about Jett then and what a season he had. He started the season with St. Lucie. He played there until the end of July when he was promoted to the Brooklyn Cyclones. And in those 79 games, he hit a respectable 249, 422, 410, with 12 doubles, six triples, six home runs, 32 stolen bases in 38 attempts, and 69 walks to 76 strikeouts. Not terrible, but I think it's safe to say that it left us all a little bit wanting a little bit more, especially in the average and slugging departments. You know, 249 average, not the best. A 410 slugging percentage, not the best. And, you know, I, for one, was when he was promoted to Brooklyn, didn't think that it was going to end well, given, again, what we know about Brooklyn. But it was quite the opposite. He played in 36 games in Brooklyn, and he hit 299, 451, 567, with nine doubles, two triples, seven home runs, 12 stolen bases in 13 attempts, and 33 walks to 32 strikeouts. Mets, they promoted him in mid-September to Binghamton to finish out the year. He played in six games. You can kind of write it all off. But in those six games, he went 5-for-22 with a double, one stolen base, and two walks to 10 strikeouts. So in all 121 games that Jett played in, he hit a combined 263, 425, 451 with 22 doubles, 8 triples, 13 home runs, 45 stolen bases in 52 attempts, and 104 walks to 118 strikeouts.
That's nuts for someone who's like 19 years old or some shit like that for most of the year.
Yeah. The last 19-year-old to have that many walks in the Mets system was over 20 years ago, some dude named David Wright. So I wonder whatever happened to him.
Just Jett Williams, please don't dive into third base in a meaningless game in August or whatever it was.
Jed Williams definitely would be the type of guy that would do that,
though. Yeah. The funny thing is he absolutely would too, yeah. 1,000%.
That's another thing, I guess, going back to Joe Gilbert also.
Oh.
Based on everything that we've heard, read, seen, both of these guys are gonna smash into the wall and you know, make the diving catches in the first inning of a meaningless game in September when the team is mathematically eliminated and are 20 games below 500. You know, they are that kind of player.
Oh, 1,000%. They are.
They give everything.
Big time gamers, yeah.
And is it because, you know, Drew Gilbert is 5'9" and Jet Williams is 5'6"? I don't know. But you know what? Respect to all those 5'6" guys out there.
It's short king season in Queens, is what I gotta say.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I mean, Jet, dude, it's just he was insanely good last year, and he deserves the top prospect list in the top prospect not in the list for that. That's mm-hmm. really
Lucas wrote something very nice that I really like in Jet Williams' profile here. He said, quote, "Jet is perilously close to the ideal modern position player prospect," end quote. And that's it. That captures everything right there.
Yep.
He hits the ball hard. He hits the ball for average. He hits the ball for power. He has plenty of speed. He has plenty of defensive value at two premium positions, not just shortstop, but also center field. It's just...
And think about him at, like... Because I think he's going to end up a second baseman for the simple fact is, like I said, Francisco Lindor's here to stay. And he's not... You're not... I don't care how good Jet Williams is. Francisco Lindor's shortstop. So think about that. Like, him at second base defensive-wise is also a huge win. It's just like he's already a good shortstop, so you just move him to second and the defensive value is going to skyrocket. He could be a really good defensive second baseman, or he's played center field in the past and he looks good out there. His arm is kind of weak, so I don't know how that's going to transition to long term outfield.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, I guess that's his one Achilles heel.
When I saw him, he like straight up like bounced a easy ass throw to second. I was like, move. But also that could have just been just fucked up a throw, like it happens. But yeah, I mean, you don't need to have a great arm to be a great center fielder. Brandon Nimmo has a noodle out there, and he's a very good outfielder now.
Also, to think about it, I think he was actually he was protecting the first baseman, because what if he used 100% of his power? You know what I mean? He's just using, you know, a fraction of his power.
But yeah, I mean, he could have a little better exit velos. I think they're a little low, from what I understand. But other than that, he's like, I don't really care about that shit. He hits the ball hard anyway. He hits it hard enough. He's going to be good.
Yeah, in the numbers that we have from the Florida State League, St. Lucie, which is where he spent majority of his season anyway, so it's good. He had... the highest single exit velo that he recorded is 106.3, which is fine. But ironically,
what's the average?
It was a ground ball single.
Do you have the average?
I couldn't tell you the average. No, I was just collecting the data for the Mets players, not the Florida State League as a whole. But you know, in 184 recorded.
No, I mean Jet Williams' average.
On average, let's see, that I can give you. If you just give me a second here. He was in St. Lucie, so let's open up this Excel spreadsheet here. And we'll go to Jet Williams, which is very nicely all the way at the end. Makes it easier to look at. And we'll pick this column. Let's go to average. And he averaged, scrolling. Why didn't anything happen? Okay, let's try this again.
I feel I'm on the edge of my seat. I'm not even going to lie to you.
I know. This is really good radio. This is really good. This is why I got kicked off the podcast, guys. he averaged an exit velocity of 87.4 miles per hour.
Yeah, it could be a little better, but obviously it's averages and that's outs and stuff, but it could be a little higher. But I'm not going to say that he sucks as a prospect or he doesn't whatever because of that. It's just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, in 184.
Maybe it's just
a little... Go ahead. In 184 of those at bat recorded batterable events, 35 of the 84 were over 100, and 101 were over 90. So
it's still good. It's just over 90 is good. It just could be a little better, and maybe it takes away a little bit of game power from him, or a little bit of raw power, I guess. But maybe he plays it up in the game. Like, Alex Bregman doesn't have crazy exit velos, and he's been a damn good player for a really long time. So it's not like it matters and it doesn't at the same time. Like, you could definitely be a really good player without that. It's just something to keep in mind.
Also, keep in mind, we don't have the numbers from Brooklyn, and he didn't change anything necessarily in Brooklyn, but he was fucking balling. So...
they're up in Brooklyn and we don't know. But
yes, exactly. I mean, the slugging went up 150 points, basically.
I'm assuming the exit velos are going up with that, but I can only work with the information that I see.
But yeah, there's a lot of hard contact. We can quibble about.
This is a dude we've been trying to have the Mets as a prospect. This is a dude we've wished the Mets had as a prospect for like ever.
Yeah, I mean.
Now he's like. It's just insane how good he was.
The last time the Mets had a prospect ranked this high was Francisco Alvarez. Obviously, he was a very different type of player. Before that, I guess would be Ahmed Rosario.
And that was a whole other thing. And I also don't think he would have been ranked if he was a prospect today. I don't think he'd be as ranked as highly.
No, I mean, a lot of stuff has come a long way in a very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think Ahmed would be ranked as highly as he was.
Not that he was a bad prospect, but...
No, and hey, what is... I mean, he's...
A good player, like a solid average major league player-ish.
He is... How old is Ahmed Rosario? I feel like he's like 28.
Probably 28. Yeah, that's what I would
say. Yeah, he is. He literally turned 28 a couple months ago. But he's had a fair career for himself. His OPS plus is 95. So he's been almost a offensively average player. He has a 7-year career now coming in, and you know he's approaching that 10-year veteranship. Can't complain about, you know, how his career turned out. That's really is. I mean, he's been okay.
Obviously, we'd want more for Jeff Williams, but. Just right, more right. Saying that, like, that's the type of prospects that wouldn't probably be as ranked as highly now. So I think I would call Jet Williams a better prospect than Ahmed Rosario was, if that makes
sense. Oh, absolutely. 100% just based on the play discipline.
Yeah. He's just a better prospect than Ahmed was. And Ahmed was, like, a great prospect for the time. But Jet Williams is, like, he's a prospect, man. He's one of those guys where... Obviously, he could bust out, but even him and Gilbert, I'd be kind of surprised if they do. Like, I really do think they're going to be good major league players for a long time. I just – they have all the tools in the kitchen to do so. And even, like, Acuna, too. Like, obviously, I think Acuna's a little worse than them, too, but I think he's going to be a good major league player. And I'm a little down on him as, like – I don't have him, like, pipeline as one. I don't think he's in consideration there. But, like – I think he's a legitimately good prospect and a legitimately interesting player. It's just a little worse than these guys. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if his career is a little worse, but that doesn't make him bad by any stretch.
I'm looking at Ahmed and Jet Williams. right now. They both had their breakout seasons between double A, between high A and double A. Jet, it was 19. Ahmed was 20. Ahmed hit for a better average, but and a slightly better slugging percentage, but Jet had a better OBP and OPS as a whole. And overall, I would say that Jet is the much better prospect based on these 2 points of time. But all that aside, I mean, it's listen, at this point, I was thinking about this the other day. All right. At this point, last year, we were talking about how Eric Orzy was the number 13 prospect in the system, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Like the differences between what that deadline did.
Nothing and, against
that. They're still facing the repercussions of it with financially with how much dead money is on the books and stuff. But I mean, it was worth it. If even two of these guys work out, it was worth it, let alone if four of them do. Because then you just talk about a whole different ball game in terms of roster construction and everything.
Mm-hmm. And as things stand right now, like we said, Jet Williams is a decent chance that he makes the majors next year in some capacity, whether a quick cup of coffee or whatever, I don't know. Drew Gilbert, same thing. Luis Angel Acuna, same thing. Brian Clifford, no. Christian Saad, yes. Ron Mauricio, maybe there's an outside chance he comes back.
Yeah, he might come back in September if he's healthy, but I don't think so.
I don't think so. Marco Vargas, no. Mike Vassell, there's a pretty good chance. Jacob Raymer, I don't think so. And Dominic Hamill, there's a pretty good chance. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 7 of the Mets' top 10 prospects could conceivably have an impact on their season next year.
And I mean, with guys like Gilbert, I would be shocked if he's not up by like July or June or something. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Acuna needs a little more seasoning, but just because I want to see him lay off some more breaking balls. But if he starts doing that, then call him up too. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need a year. You just need to see the strides with the swing decisions. But and Jet Williams is just a little young, so I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't make it until very late. I think Gilbert's the one who's most likely to make it out of those three right now, but I mean this year, to make a reasonable long-term addition to the 2024 Mets. But yeah, all three of those guys could easily be up by the time we hit September, in it or out of it.
Mm-hmm.
All be up.
It is definitely one of the reasons to watch the Mets season next year. Who knows how they'll be, but they will definitely be the impact of quite a few prospects will be felt next year. So definitely fun to watch. All right, well, that wraps up the top 25 countdown. I guess maybe next week we'll talk more about some of the odds and ends of whatever, all this stuff, but that is 1 to 25. So if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Seipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at kenlaffin91. And Thomas is at sedmetseason. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from, rate and review. And of course, we thank you for listening. We are Patreon based. So if you do like our podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Homer and Apple network, you can subscribe for $5 a month. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.